This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is also the perfect place for conventions, and we are so happy that we are having in our area, in St. Petersburg, Florida, BoucherCon this year, BoucherCon 2018. It is a biggest convention for mystery writers, and it's just so exciting. We are really thrilled that it's going to be here at the beautiful Vinoy Hotel, and I am so happy that one of the presenters at he's going to be on a panel there is with us today, because you know it takes a very special author, a very special writer, to be able to take something that's so familiar and a plot idea that's familiar and make it so fresh. And I am getting so many, as everybody knows, I get like 10 books a week now from all of the major publishers. And it's funny, there are a lot of them that are about ex-soldiers and ex-mercenaries. And so when I get one that's so fresh, so amazing, that it just is just you can't stop turning the pages. It is a thrill for me. And so I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, because he's been here before, and he's just such a brilliant writer. So I am thrilled to have him, Wallace Strobe. And we're going to be talking about Some Die Nameless, and that's his newest book, and also about BoucherCon. So, Wallace, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I'm thrilled to have you back, because I was talking to about you, and I was telling people that, as I said, I get a lot of books, and I start them. You know, I'm really, my biggest problem is I've always been the kind, when I start a book, I usually have to just finish it. But since I've been in this business and I'm getting like 10 books a week, I really have to be hooked when I get a book.
Yeah.
It's funny that somehow your publicist missed me and didn't send me a book, because I am now absolutely spoiled. I don't buy books very often anymore. And and so then I saw that you had a new release. I said, oh no, what happened? And I actually have to spend money for this book. So
well, thank you for that.
So that's, you know, that's a big compliment, because I'm like hesitant now, you know. But here, wow, Some Die Nameless, that it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I think it's hard to tell people. I never like to tell people a lot, but I'll just say there is an action scene in there, in a boat, that. There's so much action in that little scene. I'm thinking, like the boat, the whole side of the boat should have just blown apart, because in one little scene you have so much action.
Yeah, that, you know, action can be tricky, because I really like to write it, and when I sort of plan out an action scene in my head, you know, I get very enthusiastic about writing it. So you have to sort of, sometimes I have to dial it back a little bit. So they're not too over the top, but I really like, you know, writing the action. And there's a scene in the book when Tracy Quinn, the reporter, is chased through the woods at night by two men. And that was a scene I had years ago and tried to fit into, like, two or three different books, and it never fit until this book. And finally it all made sense, and it kind of, you know, it was like this book was the book that scene had been waiting for all those years.
Well, you are a master at that, just as you are a master at creating bad guys, bad guys that we like to hate. So you are so, it takes a real talent to sort of flesh out a bad guy and make one really feel the person. But why don't we go back a step and you tell us what you want the listeners to know about Some Die Nameless. I think the premise, you know, the ex-soldier, ex-mercenary, that kind of thing, has been done a lot. But when somebody can take it and make it fresh and really draw us into the story, and you certainly have done that, I think it's something that is, you know, worthy of notice and that people should really just get this book. Because when you write about Ray Devlin, who is that ex-soldier, and you set him here, I always love books that have at least part of the setting here in Florida. So you set him here in Florida, and wow, it just goes you just go wild with this story. So tell us about Ray and how you came out with him and about the story.
Well, I had written 4 novels in a series about a female professional thief named Krista Stone, and I wanted to take a little bit of a break from her and write a standalone. So I had some ideas. I really liked the idea of the aftermath of war. What happens when, you know, when the fighting's over, and what's left to what's the civilian population left with? And you know, Ray, I did not. He's in his late 50s, and I did not want Ray to be some sort of, you know, super black ops guy. I just wanted him to be a grunt he was a mercenary, but essentially what all he was doing is he was training indigenous armies in basic military tactics. So, you know, I didn't want him to be any sort of superhero with you know, crazy skills. You know, he can still, you know, take care of himself, but it takes a lot longer to recover now. So I kind of like that idea. I like the idea of somebody living off the grid. And then eventually I wanted to team him up with someone, a woman. And I had some various ideas about that. And then finally, I had spent 23 years in the newspaper business. And I thought, if I'm going to write about that, now is the time. So I made that a reporter who he teams up with. And they both have different pieces of the puzzle of... you know, for her, it's what seems to be just an everyday murder that she covers in Philadelphia, but it's actually tied into his past. And so once I got that ball kind of rolling with both of them with pieces of the puzzle, they don't really know how it fits until they come together. Then that got very interesting for me. And again, you know, I have a whole bunch of post-its and index cards and everything above my desk, and one of them is simple plot, complex characters. And that's always what I try and go for.
And definitely the way that you are able to create characters who are, we really feel that we get to know them. And I think, of course, partly your writing is great because as somebody who was a reporter for many years, you learned that discipline of words, which is so great in an author, because a lot of authors don't have that background, and it's more difficult for them to put it together in a form that really is a page turner. And so I think that background as a journalist really helps.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It teaches you a lot of skills that really come in handy. You learn how to, you know, write whether you're inspired or not. You learn how to organize your material, and hopefully you get a little more thick-skinned about the editing process. Because in newspapers, usually that's dealt with pretty bruntly. There's an enormous amount of stuff that you can learn that you can carry over from those two professions. And as evidence, you know, look at the number of reporters now who are crime writers: Laura Lippman, Michael Connelly, Jonathan King. John Sanford, who under his real name won a Pulitzer back in the 80s.
And this story also touches on a newsroom and on being a journalist.
Yes, I left the business. I took a buyout from the Newark Star Ledger, which is the state's largest paper. I was an editor there, and I took a buyout in 2008. And I still have lots of friends there. At the time that I took the buyout, fully half the staff took it because the threat was that if not enough people took the buyout, that they were going to shut the paper down and fire everybody. So that really forced everybody's hand to make a decision, and it was a tough decision to make. I wasn't ready to leave the business, I don't think, at that time. But I took it, and I always knew whether I stayed or whether I left, it would never be the same again. And paper has continued to take hits over the years. I have a lot of friends in the business, and a lot of them are still doing great work, but it gets tougher all the time.
The newspaper business is... it's so difficult nowadays because people aren't reading, and certainly the print business is dying way faster than I expected.
Well, let's hope not, you know, in a final way. But it's, you know, this has been a crazy 10 years in terms of 15 really in terms of you know, where things are going, and it's still hard to tell.
It's a hard thing to face, actually, because as I remember, even as a kid, when I was a kid, the Detroit Free Press, we would just wait anxiously for the Detroit Free Press to come every day. You know,
mm-hmm, yeah.
we had to read it, and it's a strange thing that young people today. I don't think they ever, you know, they rarely read newspapers. Because everything's online, so it's a whole different world out there, isn't it?
Yeah, and the problem with that is there are no gatekeepers online unless you're looking at a newspaper site or a media site. So you know, a lot of stuff sneaks in there, and you know, we've seen this in the election. We've seen this with, you know, all the Russian bots, and you know, that's a very easy, that whole internet thing. Echo chamber is a very easy thing to take advantage of because there are no gatekeepers. It's just all out there. It's just a big pool out there, and you don't know what's what. You don't know what's true, and you don't know what's what isn't. People are as eager to believe something they see in a Facebook post as they are something on the New York Times website. So it's crazy. There's no everything is just all clumped together now. You know, in terms of people getting input,
and talk about editing. The great thing about newspapers is you did have editors, and you had tough editors, because if it didn't read right, they would send it back to you, and they'd say redo it. And on the internet, the sometimes the writing is absolutely abysmal. It's just sort of free-flowing, and you think, okay, this person really needs to be edited. So that's why I think a newspaper writer has this advantage over other people who have not been trained as well, that, wow, there is such a thing as having to redo things or make things tighter or you know, really raise it up a notch.
Yeah, I always tell my editor, Josh Kendall at Mulholland, you know, don't worry about how I'm going to feel based on your editorial input, because I'm used to people not caring how I felt about working in newspapers. So, you know, everybody tries to be very nice, and I just say, tell me what you're thinking, tell me what you need, and if there's a problem, you know, we'll talk about it, but you don't need to. You don't need to baby me in that sense, because I am indeed pretty thick-skinned. When I say that, I shouldn't say that. I should cross my fingers when I say that, because something else will come up. But all those things are very useful. The editing thing is sometimes I read stories online, even from major websites, where just the reporting is shoddy, and the if there is reporting, if it's not just something aggregated from other sites, and I don't try not to get worked up about it anymore, because I realize it's just it's spit in the wind. But there's a lot of stuff that, and people don't read past the headlines anyway. So,
well, you know, the nice thing about, I think, your writing, as I said, because it is so, I always call good writing solid. It's solid. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about you having, you know, being ungrammatical or being, or just really crazy things that I see sometimes. And I just so enjoy good writing. And I was chatting with Larry Block, that's Lawrence Block, Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, this morning, because he's going to come on the program in the first week of September to talk about BoucherCon. And so, of course, we were talking, I mentioned that you were going to be on the program today, and he said, oh, you know, Wallace is just such a good writer, just the kind of writer that gets you into a book and you want to keep reading it. And I said, exactly. And that's why I think Some Die Nameless is, you know, every time you can't say to a writer, well, you're getting better all the time. But sometimes I'm just, yeah, you know, I just thought, boy, you kicked it up a notch in this book. It really, boom, the way it flows, the storyline. Is there anything else you want to, I have to try to entice people to say, you know, read this book. You will enjoy it. And of course, talk a little bit about the story as it unfolds, as after Ray is caught up into this this adventure.
Well, okay, let me say something about Larry Block first, who you know, everybody knows, the legendary, one of the seminal American crime novelists, and I have recently just recently started rereading his 8 Million Ways to Die from 1982. And, you know, I read all those Scudder books when I was in my 20s, you know, pretty much back-to-back. And looking at them now, having written books, I see how well-written those books are. You know, they have very clean lines. The, you know, the characters are put in place very quickly, but you know, filled in enough that you need, you know, you have the information that you need, and everything follows logically. And I think that's a craft thing, and Larry's a master of the craft, and I think you can really learn a lot from that, from reading people like him. And I still do. I still do learn from it. And I've been reading him for, you know, 30 years.
Well, he does. And Matthew, he created Matthew Scudder, and it is, as you said, there's a freshness about it that is always so amazing. And the wonderful thing, really, great writing, as we know, is always shown in if we can go back and reread a book. And I think your books are the type that people will want to reread, and that's a wonderful thing. And of course, in the case of Larry, everybody wants to go back and read it. I think now with the, you know, he's really excited about the new Matthew Scudder book coming out, and we're going to be talking about that in September. But you can go back to the very beginning and read through the series, and it's still fresh.
Yeah, and it's also a masterclass in how to put together a realistic crime novel. Larry's got an anthology coming out either later this year or early next year called At Home in the Dark. And I have a short story in there.
Ah, okay. Well,
how I got to, you know, work with him in that sense.
Well, and he is such a generous person, and working with authors through the years and helping them along and encouraging them. And I know that he's a great fan of yours. Now, I'm going to have to take a break. But when I come back, I want to talk about a couple of things. One, I want to talk about charades, because it's so funny. I've been talking to people lately about turning off the television, actually, and playing charades, book title name charades. And I think it's always so much fun to look for book titles that will just be perfect. And you have some that I think are great, but my favorite one is Shoot the Woman First. I think that is such a good title for a book, and I was so happy with that book when I read it. So I have to take a break. We're going to play a little book buzz from one of my people who reviews books, and then a commercial at the bottom of the hour. But hold on, because I want to come back. I want to talk about VoucherCon, and I know that you're going to be on one of the panels there and presenting, and so we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some of your other books. And as you said, mentioned Chrissa Stone. I love Chrissa Stone. I think that's a wonderful character. So we want to hear more about her too. Okay, so just hold on.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Calling Jack Reacher, or my favorite, Joe Pike fans, Tier 1 by authors Brian Andrews and Jeffrey Wilson has close to 4,000 reviews on Amazon. Hey, 90% are 4 and 5 star. Wonder why? Here's the buzz. John Dempsey's life as an elite Tier 1 Navy SEAL named Jack Kemper is over. A devastating terrorist attack takes him from a clear-cut world of decisive orders into the shadowy realm of espionage. His new mission, hunt down those responsible for the greatest tragedy in the history of the U.S. Special Ops and bring them to justice. As Dempsey struggles with the games of spies, the cast propels him across the globe in a desperate effort to prevent a new horrifying attack on American soil. Once John Dempsey followed orders blindly, now the security of the civilized world rests on one question. Can a Tier 1 Navy SEAL adapt and become the world's most lethal spy? Find out in Tier 1 by the author team of Brian Andrews and Jeffrey Wilson. Pretty cool stuff. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Hey, while you're there, like us on Facebook. We need those likes. This is Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my very special guest, Wallace Strobe, whose new book, Some Die Nameless, came out last month, and I'm so excited to talk to him about that. Hi, Wallace.
Hi.
Okay, well, we're back, and I was thinking about all of the great comments that were made about your book by other writers, because I know that you're popular with everybody, and I liked what Ace Atkins said. He said, a lean, mean story and a hell of a ride. And I thought, wow, Ace, you got that right. he's a fantastic. He was on last month, and he's always you know, he's always so enthusiastic to talk about other writers and to help other writers. And so I was thrilled when I saw that, because he's right. This story it just moves at a fast pace. It's a story that I think everyone will really enjoy. I know that they said a beach read, and I suppose it's a beach read, but you could read this story all year round.
Yeah, I think New York Magazine called it a noir beach read.
Yeah.
Which was, I think I'm going to adopt that as my own personal genre, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, because when I first saw the, you know, they put these little things in, and I said, beach read. I never thought of Wallace Strobe as a beach read, but you know, on the other hand, you know, it starts off here in Florida. So if you're on a boat on the intercoastal and you pick up this book, you'll love it, and then you'll start worrying if anybody approaches the boat. But other than that, it is a heck of a ride. That's exactly what Ace said. And I got so thrilled when I started reading it, and I said, "Oh, I'm having fun with this book." And as you said, this was a standalone, but you also mentioned Chrissa Stone, and I have to tell people that of all the sort of female protagonists out there, I there's something about Chrissa that I just love.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, that's great to know. She'll be back someday, I think. I did write that short story I wrote for Larry's anthology is a Chrissa Stone story.
Yeah, she has to live on.
Back for that.
She has to live on because she's such a well-developed character. And as I said, I just love the title. I love that. I love the title. And I thought, you know, that was the third book, right? Shoot the Woman First.
Shoot the Woman First.
Yeah, that's the third. And although the Cold Shot to the Heart is another good title. You come out with some really good titles. I like that.
They change often. I have a yellow legal pad that has two pages of titles that have no books to go with them. And so I dip into that occasionally. Now, Some Die Nameless is a title that was kicking around for a while. And then, again, you know, when I use this book, I had a different title earlier on. And once I decided to use Some Die Nameless, then it seemed to fit. You know, sometimes you get a certain amount of synchronicity. And it really did seem to fit for this book. So that was, a lucky accident.
Now,
Shoot the Woman First was actually the title I had for the first Chrissa book, but people were concerned that it might sound misogynist because nobody knew the character at that point. Whereas in the, you know, by the time the third book was around, the title made more sense, that she was actually more dangerous than the men.
It definitely made sense, and I think the series is wonderful. There are three books in that series, and as you said, four. Yeah, there's four. The Devil's Share, right? That was the
Devil's Share.
Four. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, mental. But they are so good. And the wonderful thing about that's a great thing about the internet is that people can start. They can read one and then go back and if they've missed or start at the beginning of a series. And so that's a wonderful series. If somebody's looking for a great read, I get like that, or I used to more than now. When I'd read an author, then I'd go back and I'd want to read everything. And that was in the days before internet. And I used to have to scour, you know, not libraries, because libraries don't lend me books, bookstores and places where I could find books, because I would find an author, I'd say, I want to read all those books. So that's the great thing about the internet, is that we can go back and so easily get all these books.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thinking of books that we can get, we could get a book by somebody who I think it's such a great thing, Boucher. The BoucherCon 2018 is coming, and you're going to be here in town. And I know that many of my listeners are going to be at the event, and they will be looking for you because they know that I love your books, and so are you excited to be coming down here to St. Petersburg?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. You know, the so-called Ghost of Honor this year is John D. McDonald, and his books were very influential to me, you know, like in my later teen years. I read all the Travis McGee novels practically back-to-back, and I'm actually going to be on a panel with Ace Atkins and with McDonald's grandson at talking about his John D. McDonald's legacy at BoucherCon. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, both Ace and I were both, you know, I'm sure he would say the same, you know, heavily influenced by the Travis McGee novels, and you know who wasn't, and you know same way as with Larry, there is at a certain point that those books become part of the DNA of American crime fiction, and anybody who writes after that, you know, who touches on the same topics is going to be, you know, there's going to be some of that in there. So yeah, I am very much looking forward to that.
Well, it's a beautiful hotel, the Vinoy. It's such a lovely hotel, and what a perfect venue for the event. And, of course, in our area, it's really exciting for us. So we have so many authors and book lovers here. It's nice that it's right here in our area.
Yeah, I've been to Tampa. I haven't been to St. Pete before.
Oh well, you'll love it. As I said, the Vinoy is such a beautiful hotel, and mm-hmm. just a joy to be in the hotel itself. And you're going to have a wonderful crowds of people coming to see you because, you know, one of the things that I've really been working hard on is talking to people about reading more and the importance of reading and trying to get the more and more people involved in just going out there and finding books and finding authors and following authors, because there's a limit. You know, I tell people there's a limit to how many times you can watch NCIS or Law and Order over and over. At some point, just turn off the television and read a book and then just enjoy this process of, as I always tell people, when you find one book that an author's written that you like, do that. Exactly what I do is go back and read the other books and see the development, because that's part of the fun of and it's great for the brain to look at an author from the beginning and just sort of follow their career or follow their development. And so I think that I have quite a few readers now and listeners who have become readers because they never thought about that. They read a book and then they, you know, like, okay, that's done. And I say to them, but look at how it's done and try to get into that mind. And I think they're enjoying that. And that's why when I mentioned about charades, I'm telling people, you know, it does spark interest. I say to people, you know, play charades instead of, you know, when you get together with some people, just for a little while, play book title charades. And it's funny how once you tell somebody a book title that they tend to say, oh, well, maybe I should read that book then, you know? And I've been enjoying that. I had a number of people come back to me and say, well, you know, last weekend we did that. We were on the beach and we played book charades because you don't need anything to do it. You know, you have these books and everybody has some books that they remember. And so it's a fun way to do it. And that's why I think your titles are really, so many could be used for charades. Now, what are you going to be talking about at BoucherCon? You have one panel where you're talking about violence in what's that one called?
One on violence. When is too much? When is too much?
Yeah. So
and that's something I think about a lot, and you know, it ties in earlier what I was talking about. You can, you know, in terms of action scenes, you can go a little overboard if you're really into it. So there's some of that, and you know, there are books that are very violent. There are books that seem violent, but they're not really. because everything's off stage. And a beautiful example of that is Thomas Harris's novel Red Dragon, which just is an immersive experience in creepiness. It's really the first major serial killer novel. There were a couple before that, but it's the first really major one. And the violence, for the most part, except for the very ending, all takes place off screen, but it's a very disturbing book. Anyway, so there's ways to do that. There's violence versus action. So it should be a good panel. There's a lot to talk about. And these panels tend to fly by. I mean, you get, you know, four or five really smart people and a good moderator, and, you know, you just take off.
And it's fun. It's fun for I think for you guys and gals, and it's also fun for the audience just to hear more about sort of the how an author is thinking. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And you mentioned, it's funny, you mentioned behind the scenes, and when I was thinking about the noir beach noir, that mm-hmm. you are also very fond of noir movies.
Oh yes, absolutely, yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about some of the noir movies that you recommend for people.
Well, I think as a writer, you can learn a lot from those low budget, relatively short film noir films, because they tend to have to compress the action and compress the characterization and move forward. You know, a lot of those movies, you know, some of the classic films, they're like 80 minutes tops. And there's a few great ones that are like less than that. If I had to pick, you know, favorites off the top of my head, you know, it would probably be Asphalt Jungle, The Killing, Kiss Me Deadly, Detour, which is a very strange film, but, you know, worth seeking out. There are tons of them. And a lot of them are, you know, people hadn't seen for years, and a lot of them are pretty striking because they're also relatively low budget. So a lot of times the writers and the directors would, you know, take some chances because they weren't spending a lot of money. Kiss Me Deadly is a very bizarre film, very striking film. You know, it's based on a Mickey Spillane novel, but it has almost nothing to do with the actual novel. It's just, it's almost like it comes off like a European art film, but it's a fascinating movie. So yeah, I mean, there are tons of great little film noirs. There's one called which I like a lot, called Armored Car Robbery from the 50s, and it's only I think 61 minutes long, and it seems like a generic title, but you know, 15 minutes in that movie there's an armored car robbery going on. So yeah, it's truth in advertising.
Well, I love noir movies, and I think, you know, calling your book Noir Beach Read was very apropos, because there is this darkness in you, in your writing, it's there. I actually liked that, and I think that's a good thing for you to use in the future.
Well, I thought that this book could not be classified as noir, because it was almost more of a thriller thing, which I don't normally do. And I, you know, I've never really had any interest in writing about law enforcement. I've never written about law enforcement. You know, there are too many people that do it too well. And I'd never really written about military stuff before. So I thought this was a bit of a reach for me, you know, a bit of a, you know, to get out of that sort of, you know, compact noir world. So I thought this wasn't, but then when people started reading it, they started calling it a noir beach read. So I guess, you know, it comes out the way it comes out, you know, depending on who's writing it. So I know I'm happy to accept that.
Well, you know, it's been, when did the first book come out? The Barboy Kiss, when did that come out?
2003.
Okay. So 15 years you've been at this business, and it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I've had gaps. I had a five-year gap between 2005 and 2010, just because of my work situation at the newspaper. I didn't really get much done during that period. And then I had a 3-year gap between Devil's Share and this, mainly because there was stuff going on family-wise. And then I also went to a new publisher. So that was, that was a whole new editing process, which I was actually very happy with. So, yeah, I mean, there are gaps. I did have 4 books out in a row. The 4 Crisa books came out, consecutively in, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2015. So I did have those out there. So I'm not the fastest writer in the world.
Well, I don't think it's it's those gaps sometimes that make you come back fresh, Sometimes if you push it too hard, boom, boom, boom. I mean, sometimes a character is in your head and you can't stop yourself because the character, I can imagine that Chris said, really took over your mind there for a long time.
Oh, still. Yeah. I mean, I think about her all the time. That's why I wanted to write this short story. And this one that ends up in, it's going to be Larry's anthology. And I just had this idea for her that I'd had for a long time, which was just her trying to survive one night after a robbery, until the daylight when she could get away. And so I'd had that idea for a long time. And that's the kind of idea, that's all you need to start writing is that concept. Because then, the characters are going to act the way they're going to act, and the situation is going to unfold the way it unfolds. So writing something like that, especially if it's a short story, is, that's like a carnival ride, it's like buckle up and then, see where it takes you. And that's a lot of fun. And also, you can be done with it pretty quickly. So but I think about her all the time. Hopefully she'll be back someday.
Well, I'm sure your fans want her back. That's one of the things that happens when you get fans and they get obsessed with one character. They do sometimes just sort of keep nudging you and say, what's she doing? What's she doing there in your head?
Yeah.
Get her out of your head already.
and
start writing about her. So it's fun, and it's nice when you have fans who are involved, fans who care.
Yes, and Larry has taken huge breaks from writing about Scudder, even though that was, certainly one of his most popular characters. And I think a lot of those times he had decided he was never going to write about Scudder again. And then, something came up, an idea came up. So, Scudder has had several comebacks, and now he's got a novella coming out with that character. So, yeah, you never know. A lot of times, things just, as I was saying, things tend to come together with some sort of synchronicity, right time, right idea, right character. And you got to take advantage of that when it happens, because it doesn't happen that often.
Well, and I think with the new book, both of your characters there are very strong, and they certainly have had personalities that demanded attention. Right?
Thank you.
And I'm one of the things that I think for all authors, all the people, the listeners who want to write, and I tell them that, in addition to, it's great if you have a good background in writing, it helps, but you can, it is a craft, and journalists have to learn it fast, because you don't last at a newspaper unless you learn it fast, but. You can learn to be a great writer as long as you approach it as a craft and get better and try to get better all the time. So you have, of course, as I said, the advantage. It's funny. There are so many people like on television. They call them journalists, but they don't have that same. They haven't been put under that same demand that people who work in a newsroom get
to
improve things. And when you're writing for television, my goodness, I would hate to look at the scripts of the stuff that the actual words that they use on television, because that is not what we call journalism.
The boots on the ground journalism, the people that cover the courthouses and politician. I mean, that's what's really taken a hit. You know, just last month, the New York Daily News lost 50% of its newsroom. And there's no way that doesn't have an effect on local coverage. I mean, there's not. You know, the slogan when newspapers started cutting back was, you know, to do more with less, but that's, you know, that's not possible. You don't do more with less, you do less with less. And, you know, papers have been taking major hits about this. And I actually wrote an essay about this that's on the Literary Hub website a couple weeks ago. I was asked to. Which I wrote about kind of my, you know, my history at the two papers I worked for, from bookending with the first day I walked into a newsroom, you know, at 24 years old, and then the last day I walked out of a newsroom at 45 or something. So,
well, I think,
you know, it's a very powerful thing for me still. I have, as I said, I have a lot of friends in the business I'm in touch with, you know, on an almost daily basis.
And it certainly comes through with Tracy Quinn, who is a crime reporter in this book. And, you know, this all the stresses and the problems of being a reporter come through in her character.
Well, I wanted to set her in the current, you know, the current world with what was going on in newspapers. And as a result of that, over the course of writing, I had to keep running stuff by people who were still in the business because things were changing so quickly. And I have a first reader who's read all my books. She's a reporter, and she had lots of suggestions, you know, about what, because I've been out of the business 10 years now, and, you know, what the current newsroom was like, how things have changed, you know, and then some things that haven't changed. But so I had to keep updating those kind of things to get a better sense of what daily newsroom is like now, which is very different than it was 10 years ago.
Well, that's why I think Tracy Quinn is a really great character that you came out with. I just wanted to know more about her, because this again, just as you did with Krista, there's something, you're great writing women characters.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You are able to get into a woman's head, and really, which is a scary thing, but...
yeah. Well, a lot of that I owe also to my first reader who corrected me on some things like that when the character was being, was making decisions or had thought processes that were too male, that wouldn't necessarily be a woman's. And so that's the kind of stuff you have to, you have to let other people read, and then take feedback on. And in almost every, I think actually in every case where I got feedback on the women characters, I took it, you know, I'd just be foolish not to.
Well, you got some good advice there, and the book is really great. I want all of my listeners, I want to tell them that they should get Some Die Nameless by Wallace Strobe, and Wallace is going to be there at the Vinoy Hotel in our neighborhood here. And so, Wallace, I'm looking forward to meeting you when I'm there.
And same here, Pat.
Yeah, it'll be fun to meet you. And you know, I actually have all of your books. And I was looking this morning. I said, you know, because I have like 4,000 books in my house.
Yeah.
I used to have 6,312, and I
you knew that.
Yeah, specific. And I pared it down. But I have all of your books. So I'm actually very happy that I had to buy your new book. It was worth the money.
We'll take care of that next time.
Okay, and I have it with me. I'll have it with me so you can sign it, because I think. Well, I think I'm gonna carry Shuto The Woman First, because I love that title so much. So I'll probably have that one too, okay? And absolutely, you can sign it for me, because I think you're a fantastic writer, and I know it's going to be lots of fun for all of my listeners to have you here in at the Vinoy Hotel, okay?
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. Whoa, he's nice. You know, one of the things about him, his books are so really, really good. And they read so, there's a pace to it. And I'm surprised that, you know, he's not up. He wasn't up for an award this year. I can't believe it. He should be. He's an amazing author, and very, very exciting to read. So there are a couple scenes in there that I think are going to turn out to be classics. And so anyway, he's going to be fun. And as we said, BoucherCon is here in Florida, in St. Petersburg. And that's really exciting for everybody in the area, all the writers out there. If you haven't already signed up, I think you can still sign up. There are going to be lots of panels. And of course, our own Carol J. Perry is going to be on a panel at BoucherCon. And she is the writer of the Witch City Mysteries, which are available at Barnes & Noble, and you can go there and see her books. It's just so exciting for her. And I think until August 20th, they're going to be on the end cap there at every Barnes & Noble in the country. And that's Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries. They are wonderful. You will love them. And they are definitely beach reads, and you will just enjoy it. And she's going to be at BoucherCon. She was selected for a panel, and that's always so exciting for an author to be selected for a panel. So I'm really thrilled and excited for her, and I look forward to going to her panel and listening and seeing her there, because I know that she's as excited as anyone that she was selected. And what else? Oh, remember, go to Publishers Weekly, check out the book deals. If you're looking for an agent, you want an agent who got a book deal, and you will find it on Publishers Weekly. They have a section called Weekly Book Deals, and those are the agents that you will want. As I also mentioned, Larry Block will be a guest on the first week, and I'm so excited about that. He will also be at BoucherCon, and I have a whole bunch of BoucherCon authors coming up, but on Thursday I've got Lisa Unger in the studio, and I am so excited about that. Woo! She is absolutely amazing, and I was reading her book and I couldn't stop on the weekend because it is so good. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, meanwhile, remember what I say to everyone: the most wonderful thing in the world is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. It is an absolute joy. So just start writing, and one word at a time, one paragraph at a time, and a page a day, and you'll have a book in a year. And that's one of the joys of life, the joy to see your words on paper. Wow, there's nothing like it. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me, and I appreciate everything he does. And so say something nice to somebody. Bye-bye now.